So the next section of the program is some reflections on how Ajahn Chah trained Westerners. As you can see, there's a certain amount of flexibility in the keeping with the program and the subject matter, and that we will just say whatever we feel like saying. But this is very much in the spirit of the Master, who was known to quote certain passages from the scriptures, and then people would say, "What sutta does that come from?" Or, "I never heard that before." Or, and then you'd look through the books and find there's no wonder it wasn't, you hadn't seen it before, because it's not actually there. But hopefully the stories and our recollections and words are meaningful and help to transform the heart nonetheless. So this afternoon, the first to speak will be Kitty Saro, who spoke a little yesterday. Just to give an introduction for some of you who are not here, he was ordained as a monk in 1976 by Ajahn Chah. He and I were close Dharma companions, Dharma brothers from the early days in Thailand at that time. Before he went to Thailand, he had the distinction of being an Eastern States wrestling champion 2 years in a row, even though he doesn't look like the pugnacious type. He was considerably more muscle-bound when I first met him. And there was also a Rhodes Scholar at Oxford University, and as he was telling us yesterday, was in the middle of a thesis on science and mysticism in the writings of Aldous Huxley, mm-hmm. when he decided to follow his nose to Thailand instead. And we have empathy in this regard. Brothers in old age, sickness, death, and noses. The one who noses. The two who noses. So, he will be the first to speak this afternoon, and then the others are sharing the panel. Next to him is Tanisra, to whom he is married, who is also a nun in our community for 12 years, and was ordained by Ajahn Sumedho in England, and both of them now reside in South Africa and teach there, and in Europe and here in the States. And then to my immediate left is Paul Breiter, who has spent about 6 or 7 years in robes with Ajahn Chah in the 70s, and disrobed in 77, has lived as a lay person since then, and practiced in Zen and Tibetan traditions as well. And he's just completed a new book of translations of Ajahn Chah's teachings called Being Dharma, which there's little flyers for that around. And wonderful, wonderful teachings. Paul's put heart and soul, if Buddhists can use such a term, of the last couple of years into that work, and it's be released for commercial distribution in August, but there's little information about that. So without further ado, and also Ajahn Sumedho will be sharing the panel as well.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. It's nice to be back again today, and I'd just like to thank Jack for coming. I know he mentioned earlier he wondered whether he would be in harmony with what had happened yesterday, but beautifully in harmony, and it was really nice for me to have memories evoked again and to hear Jack's reflections on Ajahn Chah's life and his teachings and impact on him as a person. Just to make a gesture at trying to keep to the topic. it says, how did Ajahn Chah train Westerners? And I realize I'm not really very qualified. Some of those, perhaps like Jack or perhaps like Ajahn Sumedho or Ajahn Pasano or others who stayed longer in Thailand might have had the opportunity to see more how Ajahn Chah trained Thais and how that differed with the way that he trained Westerners. I am a Westerner, and I know how Ajahn Chah was with me and with my friends. I suspect that it wasn't that he had a special formula for Westerners. I suspect that he came from that place of seeing things as they are that Jack was talking about this morning and that we've heard about this weekend, and responded intuitively to what was needed, to sensing where people were at. That talk I read yesterday, the wonderful Living with the Cobra, remember how Ajahn Chah responded to this woman from London saying, "You're like a lost child because you're in this strange land and forests far away from home." And he mentioned he had compassion for her. But he did rejoice in her struggles because he knew it would push her to contemplation. In my experience with Ajahn Chah, perhaps I'm in the lost child category, because I tended to receive from him, though he didn't make fun of me in my first meeting that I shared yesterday, my contact with him, he tended to be very loving and very kind. And so my sense of him with Westerners and with me in particular was a very compassionate presence. I think I'd first like to just share a little bit about what happened when my parents came. I thought that might be something nice for you to know. In those days, Buddhist monks were thin on the ground in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And 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 for me to have been at Oxford on the Rhodes Scholarship, something that made my parents very, very happy. We got telegrams from everywhere when I won that thing. And for my parents, when I had left Oxford and went off to Thailand, they were devastated and very worried, because at that time there were cults, and it wasn't that far off from when the Jonestown thing happened, when all those people died. And my parents really seriously... And they looked on the map, and Thailand was as far away from Tennessee as you can get. And they said, "Oh, what have we done wrong? You've got as far away in the world from where we are." And they felt terrible, like I was doing it against them. And I was writing all these letters. It was overkill, but I was writing all these letters about how wonderful Ajahn Sumedho is, how wonderful Ajahn Chah is, how amazing this teaching is. And all they were seeing was these piles of paper coming. And they were really concerned that I had been brainwashed and that I was in a cult. And my parents, their children were the most important things to them. My parents' life was to provide opportunities, to provide education for the children. And for a child to get another name, for a child to give all the money back that they had, my dad lived through the Depression, to give the money back that they had saved for my medical school education, to give it back when I gave it back to them and said, "Look, you can use it for what y'all need, or for my brothers, for holidays or stuff for my brothers." They just didn't understand. And I wanted them to understand. I remember once crying to Ajahn Sumedho, "My parents don't understand." And he just said, I saw the stern side of Ajahn Sumedho. He said, "Wanting your parents to understand is suffering." Mm-hmm. Ajahn Sumedho had high hopes for me. I think I might have let him down a bit, but I can't resist this. I came there with the name Randy, because in America it doesn't mean anything, but in England it means the sexually aroused one. And in the monastery, I just made a lay down a law when I became a postulant. This is Anagarika Randolph. And the Thais can't say F, so when Ajahn Chah would see me, he said Randolph. So anyway, with that as background, my parents, thinking they had to come and save me, flew. And I'm going to tell you, my mom is a southern girl from the, you know, country. Dad was New York Jewish background, mom Southern Baptist. And they got on a plane and they flew to Thailand and they were terrified. And they showed up in the monastery, and the mom, you know, I mean, you can't even say the word, and I won't say it out of respect for her, you can't say the word R-A-T around my mother, because creatures just, and you know, there were creatures all around in the forest, and she was scared, and but she had, and this, and I hated myself for this, because she had her camera, and her lipstick, and she was speaking loud, and Dad was speaking even louder, and I was cringing. And Ajahn Chah did something that was really, really compassionate, because he said that so many, that he loved this life of the bhikkhu and loved the Dhamma. And in Thailand, it is an opportunity for rejoicing when a son or a daughter goes forth and to practice. And he found it really sad that so many of the parents of the Western monks were so horrified and so upset. And so Ajahn Chah decided on the spur of the moment, I was a postulant just in white, to ordain me as a novice, so that my parents could be part of it, so that they could be part of the ceremony, so they could feel a part. It's beautifully compassionate. So my parents then were able to offer me the robes in the ceremony. My parents were able to be there and feel as if they had like given me away, that they had blessed. And he gave them such a wonderful talk. And my dad is big time into politics, and sometimes we'll have two or even three TVs on to see how the different networks present the same story. Did you see that? Did you see how he put the first story on? You see that slant there? And so my dad was concerned about the communists, and he was concerned about what was going on next door. I think we heard Jack talking about the war, and even though the war died down the time I got there, there still was all sorts of trouble in the neighboring countries. And so Dad was then asking Ajahn Chah, concerned about that, concerned about our safety. And Ajahn Chah gave a beautiful talk to my dad and to my mom. And he said, you know, the communists you need to really be concerned about, the ones that can really hurt you, are the ones that hide inside your own heart, and the ones that that fool you and take advantage of you and harm you, the delusions, the greed, the hatred in your heart. And I thought that was really wonderful that he did that. And so, though my parents were still sad and upset that I wasn't doing what they had hoped I would do, my dad came to me afterwards and said, this is a real monastery. He said, Ajahn Chah's a real monk. And I felt to him to take that time to care for them and to not go by some preordained schedule when I was supposed to become a novice, but to do it just responding to my family being there, I thought was very beautiful. My time in Thailand, I did used to be a wrestler, and I did show up with a lot of muscles. In fact, I had such a big chest when I used to walk on my hands and do yoga and all this with the monks, and I had such a big chest, such big pectoral muscles. The lay people thought I was a nun at first. And so I was really strong, but I was also really obsessed with competition and with winning. And so the same kind of obsession that had put me into wrestling and put me into academics, and, you know, I just redirected that to meditation. And after a while, I was, you know, it wasn't enough after Ajahn Sumedho went to England the Westerners were Bung Wai. I started thinking, oh, we're talking too much. I need to go and really not talk and just practice more. There's a lot of wrong view there, but anyway, that's the way I was. And so I went off to stay at a monastery that was known for being very strict. And I got really sick there and had diarrhea for 6 months. Then I got bit by a centipede, and then I started urinating blood, and then got sent to a hospital. And there's a story there I could tell, but there's one in particular that I want to tell you. But through that particular sickness, Ajahn Chah encouraged me. But then I didn't know it, but I had lost 20-30 pounds. I was probably already had typhoid in my blood, and I was just getting ready to get really sick. I didn't know at the time yet, but I went into a depression, really deep depression. And I think it was starting to dawn on me that there was, that my, you know, the wrestling tournament when your hand is raised up, or the scholarship when you win the award, that in meditation it didn't really work that way, at least not for me. And I went into a black space. And as I said on the asana on the platform, you know, you just look up the line and there's a row of bald heads. You look down the line, there's another row of bald heads, and you're just another bald head. And this, you know, something in us, it wants to be so different and so special and the best, and was just dying. And plus I was sick at the time too. And I just come out of a nightmarish experience in a hospital, and I knew I needed help, and so I asked Ajahn Prabhakaro Joseph, who was the abbot. I said, I need to talk to Ajahn Chah. Can you help me? And so Prabhakaro took me over to see Ajahn Chah. And I went to Ajahn Chah and told him that I felt I was in such a black space. I felt I would never smile again. I felt that. I felt that it was just so dark. And Prabhakaro translated, and Ajahn Chah started asking me some questions. And so I told him about, you know, my past and all the wrestling and the competition and stuff. And then he told two stories that I wanted to share with you, that to me is something about how he treated me at least, and whether it was applies to other Westerners, I don't know. But the first story, they're all about animals. My first meeting, you saw, he compared me to a dog. Well, this time he said, Kitty Salo, he used to say Kitty Salo. He says, you remind me of a chipmunk. And Prabhakaro said, he said, chipmunk. A chipmunk or a squirrel or something. So you remind me of a chipmunk, okay. And this baby chipmunk's mother could, it was one of these kind of chipmunks that could climb up a tree and leap to a branch and do all sorts of fancy acrobatics, and was really adept and at ease in the tree. And the baby saw the mom and said, why not? And went up there and leaped. And then Ajahn Chah said, dog. And Ajahn Chah was sitting on his wicker chair and I was down on the floor below him, and Papako said, dog. Said, which means to fall. My Thai knew that much, to fall down. So this chipmunk fell down and started crying, and the mother said, son, you need to go to school. And so went to kindergarten, started picking up some training, could climb a tree, could jump to a branch, and then dog. And mother said, you've got to keep studying, son. So Ajahn Chah had this chipmunk going to first grade, second grade, dog. And when you do that, it's like his eyes would go around in a circle, and this kind of chipmunk is rolling like that. I don't know how far we got, but somewhere in high school, I was rolling on the floor of Ajahn Chah's hut in hysterical laughter, just rolling around, and then I keep getting dog. I'm telling you, Ajahn Chah had this chipmunk getting a PhD. And then chipmunk had a PhD. I was able to sit up. And then he looked right at me and he said, and one day the chipmunk could do everything its mother could do. And this warm feeling, this wonderful feeling. And I think some have talked about this transmission of you can do it. But just, you know, do the work, do the study that Jack was talking about. The schooling is this body-mind, you know, and that we're going to fall down, and can we somehow laugh at the falling down? And then he told this other story that just didn't seem to fit. I was basking in that, and then he says, you remind me of a donkey. I don't think I was... I'm just now trying to open to this donkey story. And he says, you're like this donkey that heard the crickets singing and thought, gee, that's beautiful. I'm going to do that. I'm happy to say this was an intelligent donkey. Because this donkey, being diligent, investigated and found out through hard work that crickets drink lots of dewdrops. And so this donkey went around licking up hundreds and thousands of dewdrops. And then it prepared itself to hear the wonderful sound. And then, you know, when it opened its mouth, what came out? And I thought, why did he tell me that story? And all I can say is I'm just beginning to get the hint. You know, that somewhere in there we have to learn to be what we are. And that we're always, sometimes our striving comes out of self-aversion, that, you know, we have to be better. And there is work to do. There's no doubt there is study to do. But there is something about honoring and listening to our own sound. And some of what we've heard, some of the people that have been touched here by this man, Ajahn Chah, was that he did love us unconditionally. He could hear our sound. He knew our sound. Didn't mean to say he didn't encourage us to keep working. And I realize there's something very important about honoring what we are, and that in a natural unfolding, this path unfolds according to the law, and that chipmunk can do everything its mother can do because it's the law. That's what we become. But it's not a question of of becoming something that we aren't. So I offer those stories. Thank you.